The Full 60 is brought to you by GameTime, your new go-to app for the best deals on last-minute tickets. Ticket prices drop right before the game starts, and because GameTime tracks prices in real time from thousands of trusted sellers, they're able to show you the best last-minute deals with prices up to 60% off. So, of course, there's a million NHL options. There's concerts, there's NBA, there's NFL. The one that I was most intrigued when I just logged on to my Game Time app was the Notre Dame Fighting Irish at Michigan State University at Mount Ice Arena. Great place to catch a hockey game. You can go. Tickets as cheap as $8. When I don't want to say anything about the students now or Michigan State hockey fans right now, because I know it's not quite like it was in the heyday. But when I was a student, you couldn't even get in the door at Mon. Like, it was crazy. Like, it was, I had to work the games. I used to do instant replay for the local television station. This is really sidetracked, and I apologize. But it was always sold out, and it's still an incredible atmosphere. And how much fun? Notre Dame versus Michigan State. $8. And they've got options up to $45 if you want to be right behind the Spartan bench. So definitely check that out. And you can pay in two taps. Like, this is a quick, easy, and painless process. So the Game Time app is simple, quick, and easy to navigate. Download the Game Time app in the Google Play or App Store and score last-minute deals on tickets up to 60% off.
Welcome to The Full 60 featuring Craig Custance and presented by The Athletic. Each week, we'll dive into the biggest stories in hockey while bringing in unique voices to entertain and explain all aspects of the game.
Hey, this is Craig, and welcome to this week's episode of The Full 60. This week's guest is Eddie Olczyk, who, of course, you know from his work at NBC and also 16 seasons in the NHL. He's inducted to the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. I don't need to go through his resume. You know Eddie. And Eddie, just on any day, is so much fun to talk to about hockey, which we do to start this conversation. And I got sidetracked right away, and it's almost like you're just hanging out and looking over the standings with your buddy at the bar and just talking hockey. And it was a lot of fun, and I think you'll enjoy it. And I'm not going to have a really long intro here, because then we turned and started talking about his experience with cancer and the book he wrote about it. And it got raw and very real. Longer than, I even wanted to go, because I know he had a hard out, and we were squeezing in this interview in a pretty tight window. So we're going to get right to that conversation. But before we do, I want to encourage you that a lot of the bulk of the second half of this conversation, was inspired by, I prepped by reading his book, Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. And if you're a hockey fan, a fan of people, any age, especially if you've been through hard times or you know somebody who's had to deal with cancer, it's a very deeply personal and real read, as you'll hear when Eddie starts talking about his experience. So I would encourage you. I mean, we're getting to the holiday season. This would be an unbelievable gift idea for somebody in your life. So the book that Eddie wrote and really clearly put his soul into is Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. And let's jump right into it. My conversation with Eddie Olczyk. All right. Well, so Eddie, first of all, where are you? I always love catching you guys. You travel a ton. Where are you right now?
Well, I'm in New York City getting ready for Wednesday night hockey on NBCSN. And in my opinion, for what that's worth, the best team in the National Hockey League, the Washington Capitals, will be playing the Rangers tonight, Wednesday night. And just got done doing Chicago, Carolina last night in Chicago, and then I'll fly to Chicago tomorrow, Thursday morning, get back for the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Blackhawks. So I get 3-3. So pretty normal schedule for middle of November in a hockey season for Eddie Olczyk.
Yeah. It's crazy. All right. I want to, and this isn't like, I don't want to turn this into like what's happening now in the NHL, but you alluded to the Capitals being the best team. And I mean, they're playing great, but that's not something that I always hear. What do you like about this team right now?
Well, I mean, look, I look at them, Craig, is a team that has proven, right? Like they've done it. And if this if this run or this way that they're playing now was 3 years ago, 5 years ago, everybody would say the same thing at the end. Capitals look like the best team, but they've never done it. And everybody would zoom in on Ovi and yada, yada. So look, they've done it. They did it 2 years ago. Last year, they missed a huge opportunity to take another step towards going back to back and, you know, give Carolina credit, but you know, that's why you play the games. But what I like about this team, I look at them, Craig, and go, look, when healthy up front, you go Ovi, Backstrom, Wilson, Kuznetsov, Oshie, and if you want to throw Vrana in there, even though he's, you know, he doesn't play in the top six a lot. I mean, he's a so-called depth guy, but highly skilled. But I would put those five forwards.
Yeah.
Up against any other team's five forwards in the NHL, and I would say, now I'll take my chances with the Capitals. Yeah. Now, you go to the goaltending. Holtby has been, he's on a hell of a run right now. He's done it. He's proven. The question I had about him was their defense. Like, you know, look, you lose Matty Niskanen, you lose Brooks Orpik. I mean, how many games is that? A couple thousand games between the two of those guys. And, you know, there's something for experience. And again, come playoff time, it's going to be a different animal. But, you know, can Siegenthaler and Jensen, you know, get it done? I mean, I look at Carlson, who's having, the numbers speak for themselves, but is having just an incredible year, an MVP year, not a Norris Trophy. He's having an MVP type season, in my opinion. You go Carlson, Orlov, Kempney, that's a pretty good starting point. And getting back to where they want to get to. So when you kind of put it all there, they're probably a little more well-rested now than they were, you know, last year at this time because of going the cup and the parade and the parties and everything. And, you know, it didn't work out for them in the playoffs. But I just look at all the teams I've seen. And I like to get when I look at teams, Craig, and I – able to do a boatload of games and to be able to watch a lot. I like to get a real sense of watching a team in person, not just on television.
Right.
And I just get a better feel when I'm in the building. I get a truer sense. Now, you know, I mean, obviously the Islanders, the heater that they're on is just absolutely, I mean, it's off the charts. I know that, but I just look at the Capitals right now. And again, because they're a proven commodity, to me, the way that they're playing, I just look at them right now. Out of all the teams that I've seen, both in person and on television, I look at them and go, well, why not? I mean, but again,
no, you're right.
Question mark is on the back end. Is do they have enough depth and experience on the back end? We know they're up against the salary cap. I mean, they may only have $7.45 today, but, you know, available, but, you know, so far so good. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens down into the stretch and around the trade deadline and see if Big Mac, Brian McClellan decides to do anything. And, you know, if he has some flexibility or, you know, something comes up where he's got some room and he can bring in a defenseman, because you can never have enough of those guys, that's for sure.
He always does a little something, Mac, at the deadline. Like, he's always kicking around.
He's always kicking tires, for sure. Yeah, without a doubt. But again, I mean, this year is really unique just from the fact of, you know, them being so much up against it when it comes to the cap aspect of it.
Yep.
And, you know, you just never know what comes about, or, you know, maybe somebody comes up lame the last, you know, 6 weeks of the season and needs a rest. And all of a sudden you got five schmil to play with, and all of a sudden you can bring in a nice defenseman, and the rest is history. So we'll see what materializes, but I would be surprised if they didn't add a D-man.
Yeah.
But that's just from an outsider's perspective.
I think, and I'm actually going there. You might even be there. I'm going to go for the Hockey Hall of Fame inductions in a couple of weeks. And they're fascinating, because there's something to be said about you know, we don't know what the future holds for Braden Holtby, right? In terms of this contract. And you know, there's something to be said about a sense of urgency, even though they have one, about maybe, you know, this may be the last kick at the can in, as currently constructed for a group that's clearly tight. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, look, I mean, you don't get many, you know, you don't get many opportunities when you have a core, as I mentioned, in the window that you have. And look, I mean, he had to make some, you know, he had to make a tough decision on Matti Niskanen. I mean, he had to move money out in order to, you know, to move guys in and get money. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the way it is to be a general manager now. But you're right. I think that that's the one thing, is that when teams do have that window, and again, depending on how big it is and how many times you can win a championship, whether it's Chicago or Pittsburgh or LA when they were in their window, Washington, certainly, I think they're right there, but you're right. I mean, eventually, you know, everybody's going to have to, you know, everybody's going to want to get paid, and everybody's going to have to, you know, do what's best for them, because, you know, the team's certainly going to do that when they have the hammer to be able to do what they want. But I think it's a fair point, is, you know, their window is now. And do you take your shot, and then, you know, whenever specific guys' contracts come up, then you play the hand that's dealt, and then, you know, hopefully as an organization, you're restocking the cupboard in specific areas of your kitchen.
Yeah. And man, we've seen it. That window can slam shut quickly. Like, you know, we went from, boy, everyone wants to be the Kings, to holy cow, what a disaster in like no time.
Yeah, it's not. You know, it is one of those things where, as an organization and as a fan base, you sit there and go, wow, you know, we've won a couple and you still got the same guys. And, you know, you make decision on contracts, and you make decisions on, you know, how long these contracts are. And, you know, you think you're going to be able to get, you know, that another kick at it. And, you know, look, Father Time, the last time I checked, is undefeated. And I guess the question I have for you, Craig, why isn't it Mother Time? I mean, why isn't it Mother Time?
Well, we already have Mother Nature. I mean, Mother can only...
Well, why isn't it Father Nature? I mean, I don't, you know, like, who... Like, I know we need to be PC in this world we live in now, but I guess it's a fair question. I'm okay with Father Nature and Mother Time. I am.
You're the one with the audience. You could just start working it in. Just be like, you know, Father Nature is...
You know what? This guy... this boy, Ovechkin, man. I mean, you know, Mother Time is not catching up with him. They all go, huh?
Well, what? Not that great.
just act like that's what everyone says.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, why not? So, yeah. But I mean, look, at Father Time is undefeated for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, you get guys in windows, and that's why it's hard. It's hard when you have a core and you see guys a certain way. You want to take care of them, but you got to draw a line in the sand as an organization and go, look, we love you. We love you as a player. We love what you've done for us. And look, I know you want 7 or 8 years, and I know you want $7+ million a year, but we can't do it. Like, I mean, look, we'll give you 4. We'll take care of you. I don't want to go 4, but I'm going to do it because, you know, we're good people. But like, when you start giving guys really long-term contracts, when you see that they're probably on the 12th or 13th hole, that's really where you set yourself back, and it's hard to do. It is really hard. And then look, players are comfortable in certain situations. And I know there are a handful of guys out there that, you know, they painted their team into a corner, and they ended up hitting the mother load or the father load, whichever way you want to look at it, Craig. Like, it's just like, look, I wasn't going anywhere. Like, you know, like, my family likes it here. I'm not going to go. If they would have offered me 3 years, they would have played hardball, I would have stayed here. But I ended up getting 7 or 8. I mean, well, why wouldn't you if you're the player? Say, look, yeah, they probably want to give me 3, but I'm gonna draw a line in the sand, and I want 7 or 8, and we'll see if they blink. And in a lot of situations, you can name probably 15 players right now where the player ended up getting it, and then all of a sudden they get in this year 2 of the contract, and you're going, oh my gosh, you got 5 or 6 more years, and how are we going to use this guy as a third line center or a third pair defenseman? Or so, look, it makes it very difficult, but it's easier to digest if you've won. And that's the biggest, to me, that's the biggest thing. And I think that's where a lot of managers and, and people making those decisions can sit there. Well, you know, the phrase is, well, it's the price of winning, and, you know, all teams have salary cap issues that have won and whatever. Well, you know, you can't overpay good players. You can't. You got to take care of your best players. You do. Right. You got to take care of the great players. But, you know, that's why the bridge contract becomes so important for managers and people managing the salary cap, Craig, because I think we've had this conversation before, is that you just can't have a entry-level guy go from making his $850 or $950 or whatever it is to going to making $6 million when he's a good player. Like, that's what's going to really set you back. And that, as a team, is when you have the hammer, you sit there and go, look, I love you, and you're going to be a good player, but we're going to give you a couple of years, and we're going to give you five or six million total in a 2 or 3 year deal. And if you continue to do it, then you're going to get paid. I mean, I remember what happened with PK Subban when Mark Bergevin played hardball with him, and, you know, he came, he finally signed, and then he played well, and I think he won the Norris, and then they gave him the monster contract, and, you know, the rest is history. So I just think that it's so important, whatever your philosophy is that, you know, you got to take care of the great players. And I think we all know who those guys are coming out of their entry level contracts, but those other guys, I don't think that you can go from, you know, from 15 miles an hour to 105 miles an hour. I think you got the hammer as a team, and you got to sign them to a good contract and play hardball and go, hey, look, if you want to go to the KHL, go ahead. You're only gonna hurt yourself in the long run. And again, it's all about the philosophy of a particular organization.
It's funny. I don't know where I'm at on this, because you look at, like, how long ago were we, and I'm sure you heard the complaints too. Just, you heard constant complaints about the Leon Draisaitl contract, and oh, what a disaster for Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton, and what are they doing? And they got bullied into that, and now it's like, oh my gosh. If I'm going to overpay, I almost would rather it be for my 23-year-old or whatever, at least has a chance of making me look good, versus, like, I think Brian McClellan, and to kind of bring it full circle, you know, staring at Braden Holtby with a young goalie coming up in the organization, that's the tough one to me, where you're like,
I'd rather draw the hard line there. Well, we can look at it. I mean, you could name, you know, guys that have signed or guys that, you know, played the hard ball or whatever. And, you know, you talk about, you know, a guy like Draisaitl. I mean, look, you know, to have the ability to sit there and foreshadow and know that this is the guy that has an opportunity to be an elite player. And look, sometimes, I mean, I'm not saying you never do that, what we talked about a couple of minutes ago, but you do that with the guys that you really feel that, you know, have that opportunity to go ahead, and sometimes you win and sometimes you don't. But, you know, like, when you get into a contract, like, I'll look at it, like, look at Duncan Keith's contract, what he's been playing under over the course of the last 6 years, right? Like, he got a lot of money up front, but when you look at what he's been able to do, you sit there and go, oh my, like, I mean, that's a heck of a team friendly deal right now. I mean, really, like, I mean, that's just,
they won the fact, Stanley Cups because of that contract and the Marian Hossa contract, like,
without a doubt. And you are, you know, you're looking at, you know, what he was done, and he wanted security, and he got a lot of the money up front. But again, it's just, you know, structuring, and now things are obviously different now than they were when Hossa and Keith had those contracts with the Blackhawks. But it is, I mean, that's probably one of the tougher things for a manager to do, is to sit there and go, okay, like, we know this guy is going to be an important part. You know, how far do we want to go? He wants some security. You know, we want to make him happy. And, you know, you can look around the league and go, wow. I mean, look at a couple of contracts. And I'll just, full disclosure here, my brother Ricky, who is now vice president and assistant general manager for Ronnie Francis with the new Seattle franchise, coming into the National Hockey League in a couple of years, he was with Ronnie in Carolina. When they got Slavin and Pecci there, they had this, like, look, these guys are going to be the heart and core of our defense for a long time, so let's lock them in. When you look at the contracts of you look at their contracts now,
those are great. Holy cow.
Right? And the impact that they have on their team and what they're doing, you sit there and go, man, that is, like, that is team friendly. And then you look at it from the agent's point of view and go, well, why in the hell would you sign a long-term contract? And now he's locked in and he's probably underpaid. So it goes both ways. But, you know, I think when you look at teams that have that ability and to sit there and the player wants some security, and you got to know which guys you do it. But, you know, a lot of times we talk about the contracts that end up not working out.
Right.
But there are a lot of deals that have happened where teams sit there and go, wow, you know what? The team did a hell of a job by signing that guy to that deal, and look what he's doing. And that's nature doing business. I don't care if it's the NHL or me or you, Craig, or anybody else. That's just business. And sometimes you look like a genius, and sometimes you don't. And that's just the nature of the National Hockey League.
I think one of the interesting things, I once sat on a panel with Tim Barnes, who is in the front office with Washington, director of their analytics group, I believe. And he put it this way, and it sounds cold, but he's like, when I'm analyzing this, I look at players almost like a stock portfolio, right? And you don't want to have a bunch of the same, you want to diversify that, right? And you want to have the young players who's cheap and if you're the Capitals and it's a portfolio and you can somehow detach yourself from the celebrations and the cups and going through the hard times together and say, okay, but this is, this stock is probably at its peak now, that right. Like having that detached. And I think that's really hard to do in sports.
It is. But I mean, even let's get fresh here now. I mean, look at St. Louis, Doug Armstrong, terrific general manager, even a better guy in my opinion. He goes out and he brings in Justin Falk, right? He moves Edmondson, whose contract is coming up this year. Be really interesting to see what happens in Carolina. They got both Edmondson and TVR. Trevor Van Riemsdyk contracts are up at the end of this year, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But going back to St. Louis, they win. He brings in Falk, and I looked at it, and I think most hockey people looked at it and was like, wow, well, I mean, that's probably a pretty decent insurance policy.
Exactly.
If your captain, Alex Pietrangelo, whose contract's up this year, doesn't resign, or we offer him what we do. You know what I mean? Like, you start thinking about that type of a move, and then they go ahead and give Falk whatever he got, 6-7 years, whatever. I don't remember what it was. Yeah. But, that situation, you talk about being proactive and looking at your team and going, okay, well, I got a guy that's a few years younger, and what's going to end up happening with the captain, over the course of this year, and then gets in and make that decision. So that's where as a manager, you look at your team and go, okay, well, I could get a little younger here. And look at it. Who wouldn't want Alex Pietrangelo? If he becomes a free agent, I mean, you're going to have,
he's gonna have
25 teams that would want him. And if I had a team, I would want him on my team as well. But those type of moves, you look at. And then now on the other side of this, Craig, which I think is really an interesting dynamic. And again, things happen. A lot of times people, media, nobody really knows, why decisions are made. And I go and I look at the situation right now in New Jersey with Taylor Hall. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I compare that to the situation with John Tavares when he was with the Islanders.
Yeah.
And Gar Snow, who was the general manager at that time, he wanted to move John Tavares when Tavares was not going to sign with the Islanders. And they decided to stay steadfast and try to make the playoffs. They didn't. And what ended up happening, Tavares left for nothing. And could you imagine today what the Islanders could have gotten for Tavares, and look where they are now with Mr. Lamoriello in charge of the Islanders? They could have gotten maybe two first rounders for sure, and probably a prospect in a trade, right? They chose not to do.
You're saying it was Garth Snow who wanted to trade him, so that would have been so Lou came in for that last year. So that
He came in advisor. He was the advisor of the team or whatever. But look, I mean, can you afford, what's your philosophy as an organization? Can you afford? Now, good. Look at, they've had a hell of a run here without Tavares. I understand that, but could you imagine though if they would have moved him? How much better and deeper that they would be with what they moved him for. So now I go back to the initial part of this, Craig, was Taylor Hall. Like, look, would the Devils want to keep Taylor Hall? Yeah, I would assume that they would. Now, maybe there's a certain number. Maybe it's at 5 years and say, look, you know, we want to give you 35 or 40 million, and that's it. We're not going any more than that. And, you know, you had the MVP year, and it's been up and down here recently. So as an organization, do you sit there and go, well, we're just, you know, we think he's going to sign with us. He doesn't want to sign right now. Look, I think that's, as an organization, you put that line in the sand and go, look, we're not going to let the player drive the bus when it gets to this. And I'm talking about two really established players in our league. Sure. There's no doubt in Tavares and Hall. Can you afford as an organization to lose those type of guys for nothing? And I think that if you have that philosophy, and I know what mine would be if I ever get in that situation, as far as on a management side, it would be, look, if we want the player, we're going to do everything we can. But if he is dragging his skates, and you get the sense of, look, it's going to become a game of poker, I don't think there's any way in hell you let the player drive the bus in that situation. And especially in a situation with the Devils, because look, I think they're in a retool, a rebuild. I mean, I think that's what it looks like. I mean, it's been a battle here the last couple of years, but can you afford to sit there and, you know, look, I don't want to say trust the player, but can you afford to go past the trade deadline and say, oh, well, you know, we feel like we're going to sign him, we're going to be able to sign him, and all of a sudden he gives you the nine of hearts, right? So what's your philosophy as an organization? I always find that very fascinating when we get into that situation. And for me, I'd make a date, and look, we want the player, we offer him what we can, and look, as the organization, you can always go to the media and say, look, we tried. We offered The player, you know, the player didn't want to take the contract, and we have to do what's right by our team, by our ownership group, and by our fans. And I think that you can always, I don't want to say save face, but I think if you're always at least, you know, somewhat honest when it comes to that publicly as an organization, you're going to be able to win that battle long term because, hey, look, you know, we offered him, and he chose not to be here. And it's, I find that really fascinating. So that's one thing I'm keeping my eye on with Taylor Hall, what's going to happen with him moving forward.
So what's your cutoff date if you're Ray Sherrill?
Well, for me, I get into that December 1 week. That's me.
Yeah.
That's me where, look at you've, I already would have had, you know, again, this is just me and having coached in Pittsburgh and knowing the dynamics of working with a legendary general manager and an icon in hockey, Craig Patrick, who was my boss, you're already laying the groundwork, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months prior to our deadline. So I think you just get to a point because then all of a sudden it just starts weighing on everybody and everybody's, you know, talking about it. And now you get closer to the year. You know, look, I mean, I think everybody in the league, except for probably, you tell me, Craig, maybe 4 teams, probably Truth Serum included, sit there and go, nah, we got no shot to make the playoffs, right? There's probably only 3 or 4 teams that probably would give you that honest answer. Everybody else, I mean, it's close. Like, I mean, you can throw a blanket around 25 teams, 26 teams. So if you're in that situation and you could add a guy like that, whether you're planning on a rental, whether you could talk to his agent and you really want to keep Taylor Hall, to me, that's where the line is, becomes very firm is that December 1, because I think you start seeing who might be in for him. You start knowing what your team is and look, and then you go back even a step further. I mean, look what Columbus did, right? Like I did not have a problem with anything that JD or Yarmo did.
Like they went, I liked it.
They went for it. And I loved it. I did. They went for it. And I get it. I get it. They added, they said, hey, look, we know Bob's not signing. We know the bread man's not signing. Okay. You know what? So look at, we think you got a good team. Let's go add, let's do what we can and see what ends up happening. So I don't mind that at all. I really don't. But I think when you get in certain situations and you have to know your market and you have to know your fan base. But for me, Craig, I think you get to that December 1 date and then now all of a sudden it's okay. Sleeves are up and we're going to start putting pen to paper here and we're going to go, okay, we're looking for this, this, and this, and something's going to happen because the player obviously, again, just on the outside, we don't know, but if a player is dragging their skates, you're not going to let him drive the bus anymore, because I can't do this to my franchise, because this could set us back by losing a player like this, because this is an asset without a doubt. Now, what can you get for him? Now, that could be debatable, but that goes, you know, that goes through and through the National Hockey League, and those are decisions that managers and people in those positions of authority have to decide.
And not for nothing, but the if we're doing the truth serum, I'm you know, New Jersey's pretty darn close to that cutoff line where I'm saying, okay, that's probably one of those teams where they're at a, you know, a minus 23 goal difference. You know, they're probably not going to make the playoffs.
Right.
So that all factors in.
Right. Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, look, you're not, you know, you need a St. Louis Blues times two run from where you right. from where you are right now. You know, and everybody's going to do that. Like, look at we know how our league is. And I would imagine sports in general, but knowing our game as well as we do, Craig, you know that there are going to be teams that they get to December and early January, and they're going to be 15 points out, and they're going to sit there. Well, I mean, the Blues did it. I mean, well, we can do it. I mean, this doesn't that. What happened last year is that is not the norm. I mean, it is not.
Right.
Hey, you know what? It's great for business. It is. It's great for people that want to put a few bucks on a long shot, and you're talking to one of them with my horse racing background. So, you know, for the people that bet the Blues to win the Stanley Cup when they were 250 to one in January, God bless them, man. That is some awesome stuff. I might have to do that for the Bears, because my Bears in the National Football League aren't doing very well, and they probably get 200 to one to win the Super Bowl right now. But, you know, that's just kind of the way that, you know, that's kind of the way that the NHL is. And I'll guarantee you there'll be five or six of those teams or places that'll sit there and go, well, you know, the Blues went on a heater last year, so, you know, if they can get healthy, well, we can too. So that's why you play the game.
I was hearing
that makes it so great.
Already, like, people were already doing that. I'm like, they're like, look at, you know, you teams that struggle, like, look at the Blues. And I'm like, no, I can't already hear this. Like, there's not going to be 40 versions of this. Like, this will never happen.
Get me to January, and then we'll start looking, right? And then you sit there and go, yeah, okay, I could see it. Nah, I can't see it. I can't see that. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, let's play this game, because now, and we've already gotten like so far off track of what I had planned and researched, but that's fine. This is fun. All right. So I'm going to pick three teams here, and I want you to tell me right now if they get in or not, because we're at kind of that you know, American Thanksgiving point. And I'm going to start with the San Jose Sharks. In or out?
Wow. I thought they were a bubble team going in. Boy, with the way a couple of teams are playing in the Western Conference, I'm going to say out.
Yeah, which is crazy. And they traded their first.
I mean, it looks like they've stabilized a bit here, but I look at it more that there are teams that have equaled them or surpassed them the way that they're playing. Now, look, like Edmonton's got to still keep doing it. Arizona's still got to keep doing it. Anaheim, I think, is still a sneaky team. They've been banged up on the back end all year. I still think that they're better than what they are, but, you know, again, that you got to go out and play, and you got to put the points in the bank. But I just thought that, I mean, I thought that they were a bubble team to begin with, and I've seen them a couple times in person. And I just right now on the out.
Okay, the second one, Predators, in or out?
No, I think in.
In.
I do. I've seen them play an incredible game, and I've seen them play a poor game. So I think that they're somewhere in the middle, and I think that that's like probably seven other teams in the Western Conference. I don't know what you think, but, you know, look, their defense, I mean, right now they can't score, which is kind of very, very odd, but that's kind of always been a Predator thing, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, once they get Taylor Hall, because doesn't David Poyle do something crazy every deadline? So he's in on Taylor Hall. We'll just assume it.
Well, I would. Yeah, sure. Why wouldn't you? I mean, sure. If you got, it looks like you got some pieces. You got, you know, you got some space just to, you know, to rent this guy. But I still think Pecorino can get the job done. And I look at their defense. I think their defense with Yossi and Ekholm and Ellis, you know, maybe, you know, Dante Fabro is, I mean, he's a nice player. I don't know if he's a top four, but you know, maybe add a D-man if you can add a D-man and take your chances. I still think they're a dangerous team. I do. I think that they're. I don't think many teams would want to play them in the playoffs. Once you get in the playoffs, you're not scared of anybody. But like, I think if anybody would think that they would be an easy out, I like their team. If you talked about stock market earlier, Craig, I would be buying on Nashville.
Buying.
I would.
All right.
I would.
All right. I'm buying. This is fun. I should actually write this. All right. And all right, I'll pick one from the East and center of the hockey universe, Maple Leafs. In or out?
Can, since we're doing the buy or sell, can I hold? Are we allowed?
You don't want to make a decision.
Are we allowed? To hold this position in MLSE stock, which I think I have a couple of shares somewhere from my days in Toronto back in the late '80s, Craig? Full disclosure here. I don't know who in the hell is listening. I just want to make sure I have. You know, I'm letting the government know, or whoever's under that, the security system or whatever now you got.
That's cool. Maybe you're not allowed to be in on the Maple Leafs then.
Wow, that's a good one. I don't like their defense. I thought that was their biggest. I thought that there was that was their biggest issue. I know they made the changes. I get it. I look at Tyson Barrie, and when they made that trade, and again, another guy contract up.
Right.
When they made that trade with Colorado, I was like, man, that's a good pickup for the Leafs. Like, that's to me.
Yeah, let me
say this. The first thing, again, I know Mike Babcock. I consider him a friend.
Yeah.
If he would call me and ask me what I would do with Tyson Barrie, the first thing that I would do is I would put him on your number one power play unit and say, look, you're my guy. You're going to play a minute and 40 or minute and 45 of the power play like you did in Colorado, and you're going to set up Matthews. You're going to set up Marner. I know he's hurt, but you're going to set up Tavares. You're going to get the that's what I think that with him in his contract year, not being on the first power play, a change of scenery, I don't think that he's being helped in that situation. I don't know what you think about that, but to me, I think that you can get the most out of Tyson Barrie is I think if you showed him a little bit more love and you put him on the number one. But look, at Morgan Riley's a nice player. He is. I don't know if he runs your power play. Not for me. I would want him. I want him killing penalties. I want him matching up against the other team's top guys. That's what I want him on the ice. I want him on my second power play. That's what I would do because I think Tyson Barrie is a huge key. Now, I don't know if are they going to turn around and flip him? They might have to. I don't know.
If you're not going to use him on your first power play, what are we doing?
Well, right. Because when I saw him in Colorado, and I forget the year, and I believe – Was it not Matt Cook when Matt Cook was in Minnesota when he need him in the playoffs, Craig?
That would make sense, that series.
It was Matt Cook. And again, if it wasn't Matt Cook, I'm sorry, Matt Cook. But just for some reason, they were playing each other, and Barrie went out in that series. And as soon as Barrie went out, I think I had done a game in that series, and he was like flat out like dominant. Every time he was on the ice, something happened. Once he went out, Colorado, they lost their igniter. And I just think that there's so much there with a guy like Barrie. And look, I get it. There's no doubt. I mean, it's weighing on him. Like, he's not the same player. I mean, it's not even close. And I think he's proven enough to me, Craig, where I'd be a team and I sit there, you know what? It didn't work in Toronto for whatever reason. I would take a shot on this guy without a doubt. If I think I needed that type of a guy on my team, I would certainly take a shot on him. So I know I kind of went off course there. But, for me, for Toronto, I thought that they were a playoff team, and now I'm more thinking they're a bubble team, and I'm in a stronghold okay. with Toronto. I really am.
I think they get in. So you know, and you've seen this, and we've all seen this a million times. The guy's traded at the trade deadline, and it doesn't work. And then at some point, they figure out their role. And sometimes it's not till the second round of the playoffs or whatever. Sometimes it never is. Sure. And I think it's asking a lot for, you know, they did make some significant changes on that D for it to be October and it to be smooth. And I may, you know, maybe it takes a couple months. And like, if you're trading Barry now, I think you're getting 50 cents on the dollar. And not only that, he's so cheap on the cap. Like, I don't know how you replace that number because you're so squeezed right. if you're Toronto. Like, right. it just
no, that's fair. That's very so, fair. But again, I don't know. I don't know if, I mean, look, I don't even know what they're going to, I mean, are you going to play Freddie Anderson every game the rest of the year?
I think so.
I mean, that's a whole nother issue as well. But yeah. like, that's the one thing I just look, and I know they brought CeCe in, you know, like, he's a good player. He's fine. I mean, is he a 3-4? Not for me. He's probably more in a third pair guy, but you know, so that those are all those, you know, those moving parts. Cause look, I mean, up front, I mean, when Marner's there, I mean, this is a, it's a dynamic team, but you know, you keep digging yourself a hole, Craig. I mean, it's gonna, you know, you're gonna have to go on a 700 run just to give yourself a chance to, you know, to get back in there. And oh, by the way, yeah, if you finish second or third, maybe, you know what? Maybe for the Leafs, maybe the best thing is they become a wild card and they don't even have to play Tampa or Boston or whoever, right? So just give yourself to get in. But right now, I'm a strong hold on the Leafs.
All right. Okay. I want to go through the whole standings, but I'm not going to do it. So I did want to get you to talk about your book because it's such a personal story. And I wanted to start with just the process and the motivation behind sharing it. You know what I mean? Like I'm reading it and I'm seeing, you know, it's not just you telling the story. It's here's a snippet from my wife and the doctor. And you know what killed me, Eddie, was the line from your dad that said, you know, why not me? Why him? Right. I mean, that killed me. That just crushed me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was very, it's a very personal book. And why did you choose to do that, to open yourself up like that?
Well, I appreciate it, Craig, because that's, and what you're talking about is really what my goal was, is to make it very personal to, you know, maybe open up, and also bring hope and, try to be an inspiration to people that are out there battling, whether it was somebody like myself who got stage 3 colon cancer back in 2017, or somebody that's just, keeps having a door slammed in their face when they're, you know, when they're trying to get a promotion or trying to get a job or whatever. I'm just hoping to inspire one person through it and telling a story with a boatload of help from, you know, so many people. And I had the opportunity or have had the opportunity to do a book, and I got cold feet a couple of times, and Perry Lefko, who helped me write the book, I've known Perry since the late 80s in my days in Toronto with the Maple Leafs, that, you know, I think it was just like, you know what? Yeah, I mean, I love the hockey stories. I mean, I could have written another 500 pages on hockey stories and horse racing and whatever. But I tried to be very selective on that. And I think for me, and no pun intended, I think the decision or the final chapter for me to go ahead and decide to write the book is when I was sick, when I was going through my chemotherapy back in 2017 and early 2018. And I thought, you know what? I do have a story here, and this will be the heart of the book. Because now, look, cancer is always going to be with me and my family. It's always going to be a part of Eddie Olczyk's life, and that's okay. And as my dad said, and what I have said is, look, knowing what I know now about the disease and having gone through it, it would kill me to see anybody that I love or anybody that's in my circle, because we all have one.
Right.
I don't know how I could handle that. And I'm glad it was me and my family, because I know what it does to you physically. I know what it does to you psychologically. And if I can bring that hope and help somebody get through the day and be is honest and upfront with what I went through in my battles and not hold anything back. And I didn't hold anything back. I was very descriptive and very, as you know, Craig, I was just, I tried to paint a picture for people and all that. Look, when you are diagnosed with this horrible disease and it doesn't discriminate and we're all touched by it, sadly, when I was going through it, it broke me down. Like it tests your will to live. Like you feel less, you feel weak, you feel like you let everybody down. Like, you know, because you just kind of, I mean, we all think we're invincible, but like everything, there's so many emotions with it. And when I felt down and I felt like I let everybody down, and I kept this to myself and our family for a handful of days before I started missing appearances and missing a charity hockey game and an autograph session, and I missed work for NBC for horse racing. You know, you start putting people in a bad spot, and I almost felt better, Craig, when it became public. I almost felt like, okay, well, look, everybody knows that I'm sick, and you know, that's it. I'm sick, and I'm going to battle through it. But I just, when you are diagnosed with it, and you're taking the chemo, and you're afraid of dying, and you know the side effects, I wanted to paint that picture for everybody because I know that there are so many people that can relate, and if I could help them get through and say, hey, look, like it broke him down. Normal. That's normal to think things. It's normal to drift into oblivion and to wonder what's going to happen and what people think of you and the side effects. And I just wanted to make sure. So I think for me, it was when I got sick and then I was going through the chemo, I thought, okay, now it's the time. Now is the time to paint my picture and the things that I overcome as a young American-born hockey player growing up in Chicago and want to play in the greatest league in the world back in the early 80s, to making the U.S. Olympic hockey team when I was 16 years of age, and everybody telling me I couldn't do it. You know, people telling me I would never be the lead analyst on national television in the U.S. for NBC because that was always held by a Canadian living in the U.S. But I did not have one person tell me that I wouldn't beat cancer. And yeah. I know there are a lot of people out there that have adversity and have, you know, people, like I said, closing those doors and doubting them. Just want to bring hope. And if I can bring hope, and my goal really, the three things I think you'll do if you read the book, and you mentioned about my dad and his quote, but I think you'll cry a little bit. I think you'll laugh. I hope you laugh. And I think you'll love a little bit more. And if I can do that, if I can go 2 for 3, I'd probably be signing about an 8-year contract for about $68 million, Craig, if I could accomplish that. So, but I'm very proud of it. Had a lot of help, a lot of long days, a very emotional time, and I'm very thankful for all the people that helped. And the reviews have been just fabulous, and I'm very, very honored and very excited about helping and trying to inspire one person out there when they go through the book.
So, you talk about how difficult it is. Where did you draw the strength to get through those hardest moments?
Wow. Well, as soon as I got diagnosed on August the 4th at 7:07 p.m. in 2017, Craig, my doctor, Dr. Scott Strong, oddly enough, Dr. Strong called me. It was a Friday night at home. I had had a colon reduction. They removed 14 inches of my colon and a tumor the size of my fist send it out. And I had to wait a few days. And I got a phone call a Friday night at home. And our phone is connected to our cable. And on the phone, it just said Northwestern Hospital. And in my experience, it's not a good thing to be getting a call from a hospital on a Friday night. Like, that's just that's not what happens. And the phone rang, and my wife was up in my room tending to me because I'd had my surgery, a 6-hour surgery 3 days before. And the phone rang, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I knew what it was. And she said, "You're going to answer it." And it rang. It rang 7-8 times. I mean, and I told her, and I said, "I'm not answering it." And she says, "You have to answer it." And I said, "I know what's on the other line." And she just looked at me, and she goes, it's time. And I picked up the phone, and Dr. Strong, the conversation was maybe, you know, 17 seconds, whatever it was. And he just said, Eddie, we got the pathology report back, and I just want to let you know you've been diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. And when he said that, Craig, it was like, I was like, okay, well, how long do I have to live? And it was just one of those calls that you get where you just want to scream, you want to yell, you want to cry, you want to swear, you want to just crawl in the hole, and then you want to open up your eyes again and just, okay, well, that's just some badass dream, right? And
right.
He said, we're recommending 6 months of chemotherapy, and Dr. Mulcahy will be reaching out to you to set up your first treatment. And that was it. And I said, okay, doctor, thank you very much. And I told my wife, and I cried, and she cried, and we hugged. And then I was like, okay, well, now I know. But now I have to go downstairs and tell my 4 kids that I'm sick. And I know my wife prepped them for the worst. I know she did. Because when I went downstairs, that was the hardest thing that I had to do, was to make that walk down the stairs to let the kids know that I was sick. And, you know, my youngest son, Nick, was on his way to Colorado College to start his freshman year. And, you know, he was crying. He told me, Dad, I'm not going. I want to stay and take care of you. And, you know, my son, Tommy, was getting ready to go play in the East Coast Hockey League. And he was going to Indianapolis to play for the Fuel. And my daughter was going for her last year at Alabama to graduate. And my son, Eddie, was on his way back to Bemidji State, where he's an assistant coach with the men's hockey team for the Beavers. And, you know, as a parent, the last thing you ever want to do, Craig, is hurt your kids or let your kids down or feel like, you know, you've hurt their world. And that's the only thing I could describe it as, is that I rock their world. And that's like the most upsetting thing of anything that happened with me, the pain, the medicine, the disease, whatever. It's just like, when I looked at my kids and I saw them hurting, like, that's, you're not supposed to do that as a parent. And that's where I really kind of, it really hit me. And so we just said, okay, you know, we made a plan as a family, and we're going to, you know, we're going to do this thing. You guys are going to go live your lives. We're going to stay in contact. Mom's going to take care of me, and I'm going to come see you graduate, Alexandra. Nick, I'm going to come visit you at school. Tommy, I'm going to come to Indy, and, you know, and Eddie, we're going to, you know, we're going to meet on the road, and we're going to watch hockey together. And so we just kind of set up goals for all of us. And, but that, like, that was the hardest thing for me. And then getting into the chemotherapy, I started my chemo treatments on September 11th of 2017, my first treatment. And for me, I got, like most people, for stage 3 colon cancers, you usually take 2 chemos. One, you take at the hospital for 4 or 5 hours, and then they send you home with a pump. And you have a port in your chest, and it goes from the fanny pack on your waist through this line up into the port in your chest. And this machine goes off every 90 seconds for 48 hours.
Yeah.
And you feel it instantaneously. Your face changes colors. I mean, it's instantaneous. And the side effects for me really didn't take effect until treatment 2. I did have the neuropathy where it fingers and feet, and you know, the swallowing. Anytime you swallow, it's like you're swallowing glass. Nosebleeds, bad, you know, diarrhea, and just going to the bathroom without controlling it. And I got through the first treatment, and I was like, okay, you know, I get through, and I'd have my 4 or 5 bad days, and then I'd have a week off, and then I'd get back, you know, go right back to Northwestern Hospital, and they'd do the same thing all over again. And that's where the so-called TSN turning point was for Eddie Olczyk, was in treatment 2, when I came home from the hospital, and I just pretty much just shit myself. Like, I had no control over my bowel movements. I had nothing. I had nosebleeds. I had bad headache. I'm vomiting. I'm everything. Like, it's just like, I have no control over it. And anybody out there that has been through it or has loved ones that have gone through it knows exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm like, how in the hell am I going to get through today, which was September 15th, 2017? How am I going to get through this treatment, let alone get to February 21st, when I'm going to get unhooked for the last time and then they're going to tell me if I got to go and take another 6 months of chemo. And Craig, right. I swear, and I say it in the book, I've never quitted anything in my life. I don't care if I was playing, coaching in Pittsburgh, at the racetrack. If I was down, I was never out. I didn't care. But this broke me down. And I told my wife, I said, I quit. I'm done. I can't live like this. I can't. I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's inhumane because look, I want to make this perfectly clear. And I say this in the book. I know there are a lot of people out there that way worse off than Eddie Olczyk ever was or is. I understand that. But I just know of having stage 3 colon cancer and being right in the middle of the fight. And I didn't know what was on the other end. I'm just like, how am I going to live like this? Like, this is inhumane. Like, this is not normal. And I told my wife I quit. Mm-hmm. And this is where the turning point happened. My wife looked at me and she grabbed me. And again, I've drifted into oblivion because I'm in this black hole and I have no idea. I'm scared. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just like, I can't live like this. And my wife grabs me and says to me, fight for me. Fight for our kids. And fight for all the people that love you. And I needed that, Craig. I needed to get back off the ground, on my feet, put my skates on, grab my hockey helmet, and have the mentality that I did that allowed me to play 16 years in the greatest league in the world. And if I didn't have that, I don't know what would have happened. I don't.
Right.
And that for me is where I was like, okay. Now again, all the kids are gone. This is just me, my wife, and our two pups, Lily and Daisy, our two sister black labs who, I don't know how they knew, but anytime I would come home every other Monday from Northwestern Hospital with that fanny pack of chemo, Lily and Daisy were there for 48 straight hours.
Wow.
And they never moved a lick. And they protected me. They knew I was hurting. They felt it. They sensed it, and they helped me get through. I don't know how. They just have this incredible ability to help me through and help me through. And I know there are a lot of people out there that have told stories like that. Is when they know the people of the household are in pain, they are in pain as well, and they want to be there to be with you. And Lily would put her chin on my left thigh, and Dazer would put her right chin like right in my belly, and they would hear that pump go off every 90 seconds, and I think they knew exactly what was going on. And I mean, I love those dogs. I mean, I love those dogs, but when they helped me get through, like, that was just, I can't explain how important that was for me. But I think once my wife said that to me, Craig, it was like, okay, I took a deep breath. I'm like, look at, you know what? I may shit myself again. I might. Okay. But that's, you know what? That's what I got to do to fight this thing. And if I can fight through this thing and I can get to February 21st, then we're going to win this battle. And, I set goals for myself. Like I said, I wanted to be at my daughter's graduation at Alabama in December of that year. I wanted to go see Tommy play in Indy for the Fuel. I was going to go out to CC to see Nick play out there for the Tigers at Colorado College. I wanted to do some hockey games with Doc. I wanted to get back with Pat Foley in Chicago. I wanted to I wanted to be a part of the Breeders' Cup coverage on NBC for horse racing. And then the last goal I set for myself was Super Bowl Sunday. And that was a couple of weeks right before my last treatment. And I thought, you know what? This is the mindset that I had my whole life. And I needed that. And there are people out there that go through this by themselves. And I feel for them. I pray for them. I send strength their way. I'm a lot tougher than I ever thought I was going through this. But I got that toughness, and you asked me, and again, me being long-winded, is I drew the strength from my family and from all the people out there that are in this battle. And I was like, look, I have to try to be an example. And this is my purpose now. And and here we are, you know, a year and a half cancer-free, and have another doctor's appointment coming up the week of Thanksgiving. And always get a little apprehensive when I go to Northwestern Hospital. And the one thing I love, too, Craig, is that when I go in there every 3 months, the nurse always, you know, they take your blood pressure and your, you know, your vitals and everything else and your heart rate. And she's like, boy, yeah, your heart rate's up a little bit. I'm like, well, yeah, what the hell do you think? I mean, of course it's going to be up. I get anxiety when I come in here. I said, I mean, I spent like six months in here. It felt like 6 years. I said, yeah, of course. My standing heart rate's 59 when I'm not here, and I come here and it's 120. I mean, it's only normal, right? She goes, yeah, you're right. I'm like, well, geez, stop scaring me. I'm like, you know, like, so, but they take great care of me, and I'm very lucky to have had the incredible support, you know, from the Blackhawks, Rocky Wirtz, John McDonough, Jay Blunk, the entire organization that helped me through this. My boss, Sam Flood at NBC, and of course, Doc and all my teammates over there, and family and friends in the hockey and horse racing community, and also Dr. Michael Terry, who's the head ortho for the Blackhawks. But he's the first person I called when I was really sick, when I couldn't go to the bathroom for a couple of days. And he kind of was the captain of so-called Team Olchek, and got everybody in place for me at Northwestern Hospital. And be forever grateful for Doc for taking my call and getting me on the path of getting me to that corner of happy and healthy, that's for sure.
That's amazing. I know we've got a heart out, so there's one other question I want to ask you.
Sure.
And it touched on the forward from Pat Foley, because yep. I've got a close friend going through this right now, and you never know how much to jump in or jump out or communicate or even what the best way to help is. And I think there was a line from Pat that said, hey, call him, he's got time.
Right.
Like what,
right.
what, right. Having gone through it, what's the best way people were helpful to you?
Well, you talk about time. I have time for you for this, Craig, and I appreciate you having me very much on your podcast. And I have time to talk about this for sure. It meant so much. It meant the world to me to have people reach out via phone, via text, via email, via old-fashioned knock on the door. Hey, how you doing, pal? We're coming over, you know, and I had enough quiet time to last me a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about that phrase, and you really break it down and define it, and you can do that, and your listeners can certainly do that on their own time. But when somebody says they had enough quiet time to last them a lifetime, you do a lot of thinking. You do a lot of reflecting. For me, during that time, and I think it's very important that people understand this, is that even though I was hurting, and even though I wanted to quit, even though I was in pain, and even though I didn't know what the hell was going to happen, I was very much at peace of going through what I did and knowing, hey, look, my time may be up. I don't know what's going to happen, but I was very much at peace when I was going through this battle. And what I mean by that, and I think this is very important, this is one of the things I talk vividly about in the book, is that the most important people in my life, the most important people in my circle, and as I said earlier, Craig, we all have that circle. And I've always let those people know what they have meant to me, how they have impacted my life professionally, personally, collectively. I've always let them know, in particular my wife and my kids, is how much I love them. And I've always told my wife this. I said, you know, I want you to know how much you've meant to me and impacted me and our family and everything that I have. I want you to know that, because God forbid if something would happen to me, I want you to know And she would always say, nothing's going to happen. You know, right, typical, right. Like we all say that, right? Nothing's going to happen. Stop talking like that. Okay. But I don't know where I learned that, but I've always showed that type of affection with the most important people in my life. And I actually was, when I was going through this, I was like, look, if they tell me, okay, Edzo, time's up, that's it. I was at peace. I was at peace because they knew what they had meant to me and my life had been complete with them in it. And that helped me get through. And I would hope that, and like I said a little bit earlier about hopefully people will love a little bit more, because look, Craig, we hear it all the time. Hey, Coach Q, you know, what's the status on Barkov? Ah, he's day to day. Well, you know, aren't we all day to day in the big picture? Like really at the end of the day, like I mean, right. We all are, right? So I hope that people will, you know, maybe hug their loved ones a little bit more or let them know, because you just never know. And that helped me. That helped me, because if time was up, I would close my eyes for the last time and go, you know what? They know, and I'm at peace, and I can sail away and thank everybody for, you know, for hopefully my legacy will be a positive one in this world. But the time aspect of it, when you do have people reaching out, and again, it can be just as simple as, hey man, I'm thinking about you, you know, I'm with you. If you need anything, whatever it is, like, I think it is so important, Craig, for whoever it may be in your life or anybody else's life out there, is look at, it is very important to the person that's in the battle to be reached out for, because we all are going through that stage and that quiet time, because time goes like so slow, especially when you're going through your treatments. And, you know, it's not being disrespectful, but it is a way to pass time. It really is. It's like, 'cause you look at the clock and you go, oh my gosh, it's 9:30. I got another 48 hours of this. It's like, okay. And then the phone rings or somebody knocks or whatever. And you're like, you're hoping to, you know, you know, you don't want people to feel sorry for you. At least I didn't. I pick up the phone and call somebody and just want to talk. Like it's, that meant a lot. Like, and Pat Foley would called me every flipping day. Doc Emmer called me every flipping day. Sam Flood, my boss, called me every flipping day. And that helped. That really did. So I would encourage anybody out there that knows of anybody that's in that battle, please, however you communicate with them, please reach out to them, because it helps. It does. It helps pass the time. It's nice to know that there are people out there that care. And look, my wife asked me a couple of months in, Craig, I know it's kind of a little bit off the road here, but my wife asked me, like, did you hear, like, are there a couple of people that you didn't hear from that, you know, that you were surprised you didn't, or, you know, and I thought about it and I was like, nah, you know, you don't know Diana Olczyk. So I said, you know what? I'm okay. You know, like it's fine, you know, but there were a couple of people that didn't call or text or reach out and it surprised the hell out of me.
Right.
Like, you know, former roommates, like, you know, that I played with, you know, early in my career. And you're like, gosh, like, I know you're an important figure in the NHL, but like you didn't have the balls to pick up the phone and just say, hey, I'm thinking about you, or a text, or look, if you don't know what to say, shoot a text. I mean, it's easy now. Like, just call at 4 a.m. I don't know, but like that, it hurt. It really hurt. But I tried to look at it more from all the people that reached out, and it made the world a difference. And one last thing, Craig, if I could, is that my wife and I have been very, very into making sure and letting people, making people aware of that as a society, we need to make sure that we are looking out after the caretakers and caregivers as well. They are going through a tremendous amount of stress. They may not be going through it physically, but they are going through it mentally and psychologically. I just can speak from experience. I never saw my wife weak. I never saw my wife worried. I never saw her with her guard down when she was around me. When she was taking care of me, I never felt that. I never saw that. I was very secure. She was very strong. Now, I know that when she was not around me, she had her moments of letting her emotions get the best of her, letting her guard down, and falling to the floor and worried to death of what the hell was going to happen with me. We need to make sure that we are reaching out to those caretakers and caregivers. Mm-hmm. We need to see and ask them those questions. Hey, how are you doing? You know, is there something that I can help you with? You know, like to go to those treatments as a caretaker, my wife went to 8 of them and I begged her off of the other 4 because yeah. You're sitting with your loved one for 5 hours in a hospital. And that is very traumatic. My dad went one time. My best friend Dominic Poro went a couple of times. My brother Randy went. My brother Ricky went. And my friend the judge went. Just to give my wife a break. You know, yeah. They wanted to support me. They wanted to be there. I think, again, I want people to understand that not only checking in on the people that are in the battle, Craig, but also those caretakers, because they are going through a lot. And anytime I get an opportunity to emphasize that either on your show or any other opportunities I get on the platforms that I have the ability to, or speaking to cancer patients or, you know, in front of a group, is to make sure that we are lending a hand to those people that are in the battle as well, because I can't imagine. And like I said, I saw my wife, walked up one day and she was just like, she had just let her guard down and she was scared. And that worried me. And, you know, and again, I just think that, you know, there's so many layers to this story and we all are touched by it. And I don't look at it. It could be anything. It could be just somebody going through a difficult time, family or job related or an illness or a relocation for young people. And, you know, that's the one thing for me, Craig, is I really feel like this book is for all ages. I really do, because I touch on a lot of my youth. I touch a lot about my professional life. My family is a very big part of it. And then also, you know, my cancer battle. And I hope that there are people out there that can draw some inspiration from learning a little bit more about me and my journey. And but, you know, make sure that you do reach out to people that you love that happen to be in the battle or their families in the battle. And just, you know, there's nothing wrong with just, hey, you know, like, are you okay? And, you know, can we meet for coffee? Or, you know, is there anything that I can do to help you? Because it's nice to have that, you know, so-called distraction from them being in it, because it really, you know, it really tests everybody's will when everybody's in it, because it is obviously a team effort regardless of how you look at it.
Yeah. Well, you're going to help a lot of people, Eddie, with this book and just talking about it. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Craig, and hopefully people will enjoy it. And, you know, it's I don't want to say it'll be the only book that I ever write, because we know you can never say never, but I put my heart and soul into it, and hopefully people will be inspired in one way or the other. And look, I know you're going to laugh, because there's a bunch of hockey stories in there and, you know, a couple horse racing stories, even from a gambler's point of view, that you might find interesting. But I really appreciate you having me on, and I'll look forward to seeing you at the rink at some point during the season.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks, Eddie. We'll see you.
Okay, Greg.
See you at the rink.
Soon.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
I want to thank Eddie Olchek again for joining the podcast, for finding time to do it, as he alluded to early on. I don't know if we were recording yet, but we talked a little bit about his schedule, and it's crazy. And I'm really glad that he was able to have time to have this conversation and just be so brutally honest. I think There's a lot we all can learn from that. I think he's going to help, as I mentioned to him. I think he's going to help a lot of people. And that's a great way to come out of all this, is with that heart that he clearly has, that he's been through some stuff. And I think that we get to benefit from that on some level. So thanks, Eddie, again, for doing this. That was great. Before we wrap up, as you may or may not know, we've been building out the archives of the Full 60 on the Full 60 app or at theathletic.com for subscribers. And we just dropped the Chris Pronger episode this week. And if you didn't listen to it, it's pretty good. I mean, Chris tells great stories anyways. I always enjoy battling and interviewing Chris. And it got pretty, I don't want to say heated, but there was some back and forth. I remember it almost uncomfortable when we started talking about, I think it was concussions. And at one point it inspired, I think Danny Carcillo was the next guest because he wanted to come in and dispute what Chris Pronger said. So we might have to bring that one back, but it was an interesting conversation. Some people were mad about it. It was wild. So we brought that one back into the archives. Definitely go listen to that. On the Athletic app for subscribers only. And if you're not a subscriber, I would encourage you to go to theathletic.com/full60, and you can get a week's free trial period and 40% off a subscription. So that's at, for listeners, that's at theathletic.com/full60 to get yourself 40% off a subscription, or just try it for a week. See what's behind the paywall, and if you feel it's worth it, then we hope you stick around. All right. Thanks again to Eddie Olchek for joining the podcast. Thank you for listening, and have a great week.